This is Rating Descending,
where we watch IMDb's worst 250 so you don't have to.
My name is Abigail Ward.
And my name is Michelle St. Clair.
And tonight we watched Kalenq. The lives of six enigmatic characters become entangled whilst in search of love, but separated by the dichotomy between the two worlds of Husnabad, a town in North India. Let's watch.
Fuck, that was a good fucking run, so man. Much. That was good shit. Oh my god.
Thank you so much.
What, Abby? Wouldn't you reckon it? You making fun of me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. At least I know
what's new.
At least I know where you stand.
Yeah.
You know,
that's okay. What people tune in for.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. I think. Do you think they do that because they don't like me, or because they really like the way that you bully me?
I don't think it's personal.
Okay, yeah, sure.
I think it's just the nature of conflict is that it's interesting.
When I watch a clown fall into a pie, it is not because I hate the clown
or love that I pie, laugh.
Or,
you know?
Or love pie that I
yeah,
laugh.
Exactly.
It is simply funny.
The nature of falling into a pie.
Comedy.
What were you going to say?
We got an email.
Wow.
We got another email. And it is from our old honored friend of the podcast, MR.
Oh, love it.
Yeah. Hello again. You should not even jokingly ask something because I will deliver. You asked for the scripts, so here they are. You'll find the script of Mortal Kombat and Mortal Kombat Annihilation attached.
Oh.
Do with them what you will.
Thank you, Emma.
Which means, of course, we now have to share this with Mel Killingsworth
yes,
as well.
Yes, definitely.
Actually, I think she'll really appreciate this for Draft Zero and... Draft Zero and Shot Zero.
Mm.
And you know what? We've been sent a handful of scripts now. We should do an episode where we do a reading
of
some of them. You know,
I would love to.
You
do
got
that.
The script for The Room. We've
I
been
did.
Sent the script for Jonah Hex before.
Yeah.
We should do we should do bonus episode select readings.
True.
I think that would be great. We have friends who are actors.
Yes, dramatic readings.
Both of us have acted before.
Yeah.
All right. Next to the real reason for this email. I whipped up something as a late New Year's present for you two based on some of your grumblings. A full list of returning actors, so there's no need to manually compare the IMDb pages again. The attached list should account for all-stars. Just search for the title of the movie and voila. To keep the list simpler, it only lists returning actors, so no future appearances will be spoiled. This is also the reason for plenty of no all-stars entries at the beginning of the list that might seem erroneous. And this way, I don't have to figure out some sort of active filtering based on what episode you're on.
Oh.
I'm trying to figure out a better way to search and present this, so an interactive list might appear on the website soonish, but there's no easy way to prioritize famous actors, so it means manual work for me, which you really don't have to do this
much
work, Emma. If you find any obvious mistakes while using it, let me know. This wasn't that easy to test properly, which is fair.
Oh.
Also, when will we get the podcast everyone is truly craving for, Abigail Learns Astronomy? All the best for the new year, MR.
Oh my god, thank you. The effort that Emma puts into our podcast is insane.
Incredible.
Yeah.
If we had the budget, I'd be like, Emma, here's a bunch of money. Can you run a website?
Yeah.
Can you just make that the Ready Descending website?
Yeah.
Honestly.
Oh, that's so fun. Thank you for collating that data once again for us. We never would have bothered.
Well, yeah. And also is not required, but it does fill me with such joy. So it is a gift that I appreciate.
It's a beautiful gift. Thank you so much. It's a great way to start 2024, is being able to peruse the IMDb All-Stars from Rating Descending.
Oh, yes. And who was in this one? Oh, ha, ha, ha.
We're in such a niche part of podcasting.
Yeah.
Like, what we do is incredibly strange.
We're a niche within a niche. Like, bad movie is already a subgenre of movie podcast, and then we're like this IMDb focused queer feminist take on bad movies.
The truth is, like, when we started, I don't know if we really thought we'd be able to make it through all of it. We kept laughing, being like, haha, 250 movies, 5 years.
Yeah.
And now we're getting towards the end.
I'm almost panicked. It's so soon.
I'm panicked, but I'm genuinely shocked we stuck at it, and I don't fully understand why.
I was thinking just the other day when I was watching Jaws 3, because I watched it whilst I was on a date, and kind of towards the end of it, I was like, you know, I really have a limited amount of time on this earth before I die. Like, that there is only one chance I get. And I've spent so much of it watching these movies.
Yeah.
But in a way, as we get closer, it actually feels less depressing than it did at the beginning. It feels like a totemic achievement.
Well, it's because we now have what is known as Stockholm Syndrome. We have been so involved in this podcast for so long, we lost sight of how stupid it is and unnecessary it is. And now we think we need it as part of our lives.
But we're now becoming experts in this genre.
There's no genre. No one cares.
Bad movies as decided by IMDb's algorithm, obviously.
And the thing is, like, it's true. Like, we only have so much time on this earth.
Yeah.
And this morning I woke up. We live in Melbourne. It's summer. Beautiful blue day, 25 degrees when I woke up, getting up to 30. And the great thing about summer in Melbourne is that it is dry, and even on a hot day, it's not humid, it's just stunning. And I woke up this morning, I made myself some breakfast, and I knew that we had this, you know, at 12, and I knew I had to watch this film. So I had exactly the right amount of time to watch this film. And I thought, wow, what a waste. There's so many things I could do with this exceptional, sublime morning. And I kept thinking, oh, I'd love to go out and do that. I'd love to go get a coffee, or maybe we could go here. And I thought, no, I've got to sit on my couch and watch a 2-hour and 45-minute film.
Sometimes I really would rather do anything else.
Yes.
When we are done with this podcast in like almost in 2 years, like, you know, we're pretty through it, but we've still got like 85 movies to go.
Yeah. It feels close, but it's still a long way away.
It's still quite some time.
Yes.
We will still have to have off weeks and everything.
Yeah. Let's not get too attached, you know, too nostalgic yet.
When
we're
you
still
are done,
stuck in it.
What do you think you're going to do with all that free time? Because I was thinking make a great work of art, or
write the movie I've always wanted to.
Learn a language.
Be a better wife, or I don't know, man. There's so many things I could do with
Take
all
care
of that
of
time.
My newborn child.
Yes. Well, speaking of Kalank, this week we did watch Kalank.
That's a perfect pivot.
Yeah. And that's what we did.
Yeah. Well, okay, so this was another in our long, now illustrious introduction into not just Bollywood movies, but specifically the Indian historical epic.
Yes, genre. Yes. We've had a few of them.
Yeah.
This was alongside, oh my God, I forgot the name of it. The other one we did about that guy that was
Tube Light.
This alongside Tube Light was a real disappointment.
As I wrote in my notes, at least Tube Light was wildly offensive.
Exactly. Like, and that gave us something to talk about and argue about.
I was upset at that. I felt nothing about this.
That's right. Any emotion is better than no emotion whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly.
Truly, this was 2 hours and 45 minutes long, and it didn't fill me with joy. It felt me with a real resentment that it was so long. And what I did like about this film, I will say, is that it was beautiful, and that the sets were beautiful, the costumes were beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
And it made me really appreciate Indian history. It put me in a real Indian history mood. I was like looking up a bunch of shit that I didn't need to look up. And so it got me into this beautiful atmosphere. And even Claude walking by, he was like, fuck, India looks beautiful in that. And I was I know. There's lots of beautiful pinks and there's petals falling, and she wears the most beautiful things, like the most beautiful saris. And then, like, the actual sets and the locations,
oh
some
my
of them
God,
are just, they look like paintings.
Incredible.
So I was like, gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous. But then there's the plot. And then there's every single line of dialogue, which, hey, it's translated into English for us from Hindi, but...
Yeah.
And that's not fair, because, to be honest, like, if you're reading a translation of Proust, you're not really reading Proust. You're not.
Yeah.
That's just the sad truth of it. You can get a good translator, but you're still reading them and not the author.
Yeah. And sometimes you can have, of course, really good translations that keep to the spirit of the original work.
Yeah.
It's a very specific, hard job, you know. And sometimes then you have famously bad translations that then become beloved in their own right. That happened, I've talked before on this podcast, with Final Fantasy and the... I can't remember the guy's name, but the translator of those, like, famously was so weird.
Yeah.
But also they've become beloved, but it's not the same.
It's not. And the truth is, the thing about language is that it is so nuanced. Every word, even if it technically has the same meaning, has different implications and connotations that you cannot fully grasp. The translator can, but you can't really grasp when you're reading it.
Mm.
So anyway, so it's not fair to criticize the dialogue in that respect. But even, you know... even Indian people hated the film. Yeah, even people that spoke Hindi thought it was terrible.
You know, exactly. So, like, I think we're allowed to make an assumption that the script was not great.
Exactly. I think the majority of people that voted it down here were also people that spoke Hindi. So,
yeah.
I don't doubt that it was still terrible dialogue. Yeah. But but that's the thing. It was beautiful, but it just went for too long. And I didn't have a good time.
It also didn't need to be that long. Thugs of Hindostan is long and at times a little slow, but also so much happens in it. It kind of, you know, it argues for itself being that long. Rawan as well argues for being that long.
Because it's fun. It's fun and it's joyous and it has great scenes and sequences and things that would make me go like, oh my God, you know?
This is a movie where six people wait for history to happen.
Yes.
They don't do anything
about
it.
There's a lot of long staring scenes.
I don't really get what the plot is. I don't understand it.
Look, I'll get into the key details in the overview, so maybe you'll understand more. But look, nothing much happens. That's the problem. 2 and 45 minutes and nothing really happens.
I didn't look up any other details, but I repeatedly went to the Wikipedia plot summary to go like, am I following this?
Yeah.
And the answer was, kinda.
It's because their emotional reactions to things didn't make sense every time. So I'd be like, is he upset about that? I'm confused. Why would he be so upset about that?
Are they falling in love or are they upset at each other?
Are they falling in love or is he preying on her? Like, is he following her around being a predator? Well, let's.
And also, then the movie goes, yes, he's evil, but he is still romantic. And I'm like, what?
Yeah. Look, the whole. Okay. Let's get into it. So this film was made in 2019. Okay. It has 3.6 stars on IMDb when we locked the list. It's a Hindi language period romantic drama, and it was directed by Abhishek Varman.
Cool.
Abhishek had done a film in 2014 that was kind of popular, and then he did this and nothing since. Yeah. It was a critical and commercial flop.
Ooh.
The budget was 130 crore.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the box office was 146 crore. And I did some calculations to figure that out. And I think that 130 crore is $15 million US.
Yeah.
And so it made $17.5 million back, which would be $27 million AUD dollars, you know?
Right.
Dollars.
But that's
not
a bond.
Good. It is not good. It was a massive flop. And it was for a lot of the cast members who are very revered Bollywood actors.
Oh, really?
It was a lot of people being like, we think this is like the first proper flop a lot of them have been in.
Oh, wow. By the way, is this the first time we've done a Hindi movie that didn't have any of the three Khans?
Yeah, first non-Khan.
There
Hindi
was a
film.
Shot where I swear to God it was Amir Khan, but I tried looking it up and it wasn't.
No, none of them were in it. So
I
it
miss
was
Amir Khan. He's great. He's
Amir
a good
was my
guy.
Favorite. Isn't he just the best?
I know that Shahrukh Khan is like insane.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
the guy.
He's and like he's, the Tom Cruise of fucking.
Yeah, but Amir Khan, I'm like, this man speaks to me.
Yeah,
you know?
And he seems really nice. And then there's the third Khan, which we don't like as much.
He's the evil Khan.
The evil Khan.
Oh, the good Ben the ugly.
What is Shah Rukh ugly?
Ugly mentally. He's insane.
I would say he's definitely the least hunky out of the three of them.
I think so. Yeah. I didn't mean ugly physically.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so the cast involved, we talked about the main six characters. So we had Madhuri Dixit as Baha Begum, who was the mother and the madam of the novel. She, Madhuri Dixit, is like a huge name.
Oh,
like,
really?
Probably one of the most revered. Sounds like, you know, akin to like the Meryl Streep of fucking Bollywood.
Okay.
People are obsessed with her. She's an icon. We've also got Satya, played by Sonakshi Sinha. I was looking into her. She sounds like a wonderful person.
I need you
she
to explain
really cool.
Satya to me because I don't understand what her fucking deal was.
Yeah, we'll get into that because I was confused by her motivations. We've got Alia Bhatt as Roop Sami Chaudhry, and Roop is like the main character, I would say.
She was. When I say doing her best, sometimes we say that to be like a little passive aggressive and do a bit. I feel like she was giving it. It's just there was nothing to give.
Yeah. And she's very beautiful. She's got
very
a very
beautiful.
Little face, like little features. It's very
she's good at dancing.
Like good at dancing, nice voice.
I mean, they're all good at dancing.
Yeah, they're all good at dancing. And then you've got Varun Dhawan playing Zafar, who is the roguish womanizer.
He is the proof that, like, there's, like, such a stereotype of, like, Indian men have great hair.
Yeah.
And he really does have great hair.
You know why? It's because it's thick and voluminous.
It's so thick and, like, wavy. Yeah. It's great hair. He had great hair in this.
Yeah. And what I love in Bollywood films is that the men wear, like, coal in their eyes. So they have this, like, kind of, like, twinky, cute eyeliner look going on.
Oh, yeah. It's so twinky. It's pretty hot.
And then you've got Aditya Roy Kapoor playing Dev, who is the husband Roop has to marry. And then you've got Sanjay Dutt playing Balraj Chowdhury, who is the dad, the patriarch of the two brothers, the two sons.
Was not expecting him to make it to the end.
No, me neither.
That was crazy.
Me neither. Also, Sanjay Dutt is a really interesting guy. Apparently, because the thing about Bollywood actors, and the thing I think about India in general, is that there seems to be a lot more, what's the word?
Movies.
People. No, there seems to be this really, like, I think the celebrities are held up to have, like, high moral values all the time.
Oh,
like,
sure.
They have to be good role models is what I've seen, which is why when there is controversy around an actor, it seems to be a lot more rare and a lot more... Like, I think the whole idea is that you have to be, like, polite and respectful, and you have to have a good image.
Do you think that's, like, a conservative, like, almost, like, 50s studio era sort of thing? Or, like, we know that our role is also to be a public role model, and so we take that part of it seriously?
I don't know. Maybe a blend of both. But, like, thinking about, like, the idea of, like, Shah Rukh Khan, who has to be, like, he is a family man. He's got to portray this image of being a family man. I feel like a lot of them are, like, they need to be good ambassadors, whereas I feel like in Western society, don't get me wrong, celebrities don't want to be, quote-unquote, cancelled, but they don't have the same need to be, like, role model citizens. Like, they don't have to be, like, so, I don't know, well-spoken, polite, have their shit together. If anything, we reward celebrities here for being chaotic and being, like, eccentric.
Yeah.
Whereas it's different in India.
It's interesting because, like, we kind of allow our celebrities to be alcoholics.
Mm.
But then, like, when John Mulaney divorced his wife, people were up in arms.
Yeah, yeah.
As if that was their moral problem.
And fully,
That was by far the least moral problem I had with them in that era.
Oh, when people try and cancel someone for their personal life.
Yeah.
That's crazy. It's not like he didn't commit a fucking crime. He left his spouse and you want to cancel him for it. Yeah, she was heartbroken. That sucks. And she seems like a great person. But the idea of being like, what an asshole. I know everything that happened in that interaction.
Yeah, him platforming Dave Chappelle upset me way more.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Can you actually go for people when they've actually made a proper mistake?
Yeah.
Like, professionally, or, like, if they've actually committed a criminal act, you know, not just leaving their spouse.
Well, like Ezra Miller doing crimes.
Yeah,
and still getting to be in movies. Right?
That's crazy.
that was insane. It's like they wanted us to forget that he did real crimes.
What about Donald Trump, who did real crimes and is allowed to run for fucking president
real
again?
Real crimes! Anyway. Keep going.
But Sanjay Dutt is a very well-known actor as well. And apparently there was a lot of, like, controversy around him because he is known to have drug addiction issues.
Oh, okay.
And again, this is what seems so rare, is that I think if people do have issues in India, it is not as spoken about, it's not as known about.
Mm.
I sometimes wonder if that's, like, the after effects of, like, British colonialism, which is, like, this very Anglo mentality of, like, keep calm, carry on, not talk about your problems.
I've heard that's a huge problem as well. Like, the British legal system in a lot of, like, African countries is a legacy of conservatism.
Yeah,
I wonder if, like, there's the tabloid style press is as popular in India, because that drives a lot of the, like, celeb gossip vehicle.
I don't know, but yeah, it does almost feel like the whole idea of, like, India's social elite do almost hold themselves up to moral standards that the English did in, like, the 1950s.
Cool. Yeah.
So I feel like that's kind of what it is. But apparently, this is crazy, and we don't have to go into it, but I did want to mention, when I was looking up Sanjay Dutt, have you heard about, like, all the bombings that happened in, like, Bombay and Mumbai in the 90s?
Not in the 90s, not.
There's heaps of them, like, heaps of, like, bombing attacks. It was, like, a really turbulent time. And apparently they think he was involved.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. What?
Yeah.
It's like finding out, like, fucking Brendan Gleeson might have been a member of the IRA.
Yeah, apparently he, like, procured, like, guns from people that were also involved in the bombing, so they know he had links to the people that were involved.
Oh,
he was also, like, sentenced to, like, prison. Like, he went to jail for 5 years, and then he was, like, let out in a series of bails and then returned. So he's like a really troubled person, but I found him really interesting because it seems rare. A lot of them are just like, good, I'm married. I've been married for 20 years and I love making movies. Like, that's the thing. Anyway, I've been derailed. Let's get into the overview.
Well, this has been interesting. I've been interested.
So Satya has a year to live.
Yes.
And organizes for an old family friend, Roop, to marry her husband, Dev, in her place.
Okay, so first off, what?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. What I didn't get is that at the beginning, she comes and says, I need a year of your life.
Yes.
And then Roop is like, fine, but I will marry your husband. I will not be a mistress. And I was like, wait, when did we get to her husband? When did she ask her to marry? Okay, so we
didn't miss something.
No, no, no. They just didn't explain it.
Because she says, I need a year of your life, which...
And
which
she's like, I'm a slave. And she's like, you've misunderstood me. I just need a year of your life.
But it's also confusing because it's like, is she talking about the year before she dies? What does she mean? Is her plan to make him fall in love with her?
Well, when she says, or when she's also like, I need a year of your life. And then Roop says, I will marry your husband. That's the rest of her life.
I know. But she was saying that by going like, after you die, he's just going to kick me out. So I don't want to come do that unless I have the security that I'm not going to be like turned out.
So why did she want her in the house?
I guess it was like so that they would organically fall in love. That's the only thing I can think of that makes sense.
See, I thought it was like Satya was like, I'm going to die. This is what would make sense to me.
Sure.
I'm going to die. And this is what the rest of the film makes it seem like.
Okay.
I'm going to die. I don't want my husband to be alone. I want to find him a good match. I will get Roop to take my place as his wife.
For 1 year?
But in that opening scene, she doesn't straight up ask. Roop assumes. And then she says to Roop, I'll only need you for a year. So in that case, what was the plan? And Roop says, as you said, I want to be married to him. I won't come in and be a mistress. So did she want initially Roop to come in for 1 year to fuck her husband and then leave?
I think this is what I mean. I think she wanted her to come in so that they would organically court and fall in love in the hope that the husband would have companionship after she died. But instead
she straight up marries him.
Yeah.
Forever.
Forever.
So she does that. Roop and Dev agree to be platonic and respectful.
Mm-hmm.
As Dev loves Satya too much.
Yeah.
Roop wants to go
obviously. His wife.
It's his wife.
Well, not anymore. But.
And they're both like trapped in it. He's like, I don't want this either. It's like, wouldn't you just be like, hey, honey, why don't we just focus on you while you're dying? You know, you don't need to worry about this.
It sounds like Satya went rogue doing this. Dev is not into
it. No one is into it.
No one's into
it. And we don't understand why she did it either.
Satya also involves a lot of emotional blackmail because she's like, I'm dying. Please do this for me. Yeah, we're childhood friends.
And everyone's there being like, but why?
Later, when Roop is mad, Satya goes like, you wrote your own destiny. Bro, you like insisted. Yeah, you gave her like no fucking option.
Satya makes zero sense.
Satya sucks.
Roop wants to go to work at Dev's newspaper and wants to write an article for them.
Boss feminist bitch.
Yeah, great stuff. And she's educated. That's a big thing. She's like properly educated.
That's why she didn't want to just get trapped.
Yeah, yeah. She's understandably very depressed during this time.
Yeah.
Roop meets Bahar, a madam who teaches her to sing.
Yes.
She also meets womanizing blacksmith Zafar and is wooed by him for nefarious reasons.
Mm.
Zafar is actually Dev's illegitimate half-brother, abandoned by his mother Bahar. So just to make that clear for you guys, the listeners, you've got Roop has married Dev.
Yeah.
Dev's dad went rogue and had sex with another woman, Bahar, and he had an illegitimate son. That guy now wants to woo Roop, Dev's new bride, to fuck over Dev.
Well, at first, I think they're just genuinely courting each other. And then Bahar tells him... Well, that she's the mom. Yeah. And it kind of drops that, like... Oh, well, and he's like, oh, I'm going to ruin that guy's life.
Yeah, so sure. He ends up using Roop against Dev.
Yeah. He doesn't really know who Dev is, except in theory, which plays into the plot later.
Yeah. When Roop finds out his intentions, she consummates her marriage with Dev.
Yeah.
So they have sex. When she's like, oh my God, Zafar, you were using me. Zafar then confesses how he truly loves her, but they're forced to flee when the riots over the partition of India erupt. So that means this is set in 1947, by the way.
Yeah.
Or 1946. While boarding a train, Zafar is stabbed in his stomach 4 times with a dagger and Roop and Dev managed to escape.
I think that sequence was overdrawn out, but I actually think there was parts... It went forever. But there was parts of it where I was like, this is pretty emotionally brutal.
Yeah.
Specifically the bit where Roop is leaning out of the train...
Forever.
But Dev is looking at her. Like, clearly he's grown to like her.
He tells her he grows to have an affection. That's why they consummate the marriage.
Yeah. He's looking at the woman that he's grown to love, screaming out for someone else that she really loves as that guy dies. That's pretty, that was, I was like, that's pretty emotionally brutal if really drawn out.
Well, they survive and they remain married, but they're not in love and both remember their old loves, Satya and Zafar. And that's it.
It's kind of, for a romance movie, it's pretty sad.
Yeah, both of them don't end up very happy. But they're like, it's not like they're unhappy. They're like content, but sad.
Yeah.
They've lost the people that they love. And then there's
like each other.
They do. They get along. And there must be an affection that builds. But there is like this thing where the end is almost like a monologue of her talking about the idea of love and destruction. Yeah. And that love and hate are both red. And what did this story teach you? It's this long monologue. There were various parts of the film where everyone's trying to stab at whatever the film could be about, but no one agreed what it was. So it's just various different conversations or monologues that mean nothing.
Yeah, and at the end she tries to summarize it and basically is like, you make up your mind, and looks at the camera.
The end.
Fuck you.
Yeah, this is why I rant about theme all the time. You start your project with a strong theme that makes sense, and if someone says, what's the theme? You can point to a sentence, and if you can't do it, figure it out.
I also, this is one thing I wasn't sure if you did or didn't find in your research, because the partition of India, big thing, especially in that region, in Bengal, you know, it's almost like the fucking splitting of Germany, except instead of, and then we'll reunite them, they just never got reunited. And of course, doing it along religious lines, the very English thinking of like, if they each have their own one, then we'll resolve peace. Yeah. And it's like splitting a culture and inciting sectarian violence does not create peace, you dumb fuck.
Yes.
So I know there was a lot of, you know, religious tension in this moment.
Mm.
Because this is a Hindi movie, and given where the Indian government is right now, being like a bunch of Hindi nationalists.
Yeah.
There's parts of this movie that do smack a little of nationalism.
Yeah, definitely.
And propaganda, because like, the Muslims are pretty invariably betrayed as like evil, violent Muslims.
Yeah.
With all of the Hindi characters going, well, actually what we want is for it to be one country. You know, we want to stay united. And they're like, fuck you. We don't want to be united. We want to kick you out of here and take control.
So a lot of this film is, dabbling in the partition of India that's happening at that time. And they try and make out that it was Zafar who had implanted these like seeds of rebellion that incited this mass riot at the end of the film. It's Safar's fault that all of these riots have broken out and he ends up getting stabbed by the friend he was trying to rile up.
Yeah, Abdul.
Abdul, yeah. And when, yeah, so I... And,
the
and
evil, dark Muslim.
Particularly, they're trying to section off this area in terms of the religious sectors. So yeah, Muslim versus Hindi. And like, there's so much... The partition of India is such an intensely interesting...
It is so
political topic that this film could barely scratch upon. I was like, why did you bother including it if you couldn't actually portray it right?
For like 2 hours of the runtime, it only does it by going like... That Dev in the newspaper is like, I want to run a thing about how actually partition might be bad. And the dad goes, I don't know. And he's like, I'm going to do it anyway. And that's basically it.
Yeah.
For 2 hours.
And then you see a couple of men going to partition rallies or meetings in town. And then Roop goes, what's that? And they're like, it's for the partition. And that's it. Like, it's bizarre. Partition. It's bizarre.
I learned more about the Indo-Chinese War in Tube Light than I learned about the partition of India in this.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. They didn't teach you anything about the partition. They tried to weave in this fictional character being the inciting of a riot that never happened. That was it.
Yeah.
I'm sure there was a riot. It wasn't this riot.
No.
A guy wasn't stabbed in the abdomen 4 times getting pulled off a train. But the partition of India is interesting. And I've got to say, we should talk about it later because... I don't have any trivia.
Oh.
Like, truly not much trivia, which meant I was like, maybe we could just read into the Indian partition together, because I've got a little article about it.
We can do that.
So, the film.
The film. The movie itself. Yeah, okay, so
I mean, we could do something else if you want. You know what we could do in this next 20 minutes?
What?
We could bake a batch of cookies. We could go for a walk together.
Aww.
We could watch an episode of a good sitcom.
But instead, we're cursed to do this. IMDb Boss Baby, made us sign that contract at the crossroads.
You know, we have midnight. To do this, but it doesn't mean we have to say anything. We could just sit here That's in silence true. For 20 minutes. This is our way of writing.
Is this the loophole?
Yes.
We found the loophole.
Guys, bear with.
It's me, Boss Baby.
What do you think you're doing?
Boss Baby, I'm so sorry. We were recording the podcast right now. I hope that's okay.
No.
No?
No.
Why no? We were simply just recording as you requested in the contract. Oh, Boss Baby. Boss Baby, he needs to change his diaper. All right.
Boss Baby's got a gun, Michelle.
Oh my God.
Be careful.
Boss Baby. Well, Boss Baby,
he's
gonna...
back in heat.
Just point the gun away from me and I'll change your diaper, okay? Okay? Ow, my leg! Fucking hell!
Okay, we'll do it. We'll
Boss
do it.
Boss Baby, we'll do it.
Just
okay.
calm down.
Okay, we'll talk about the movie. there was a line in this where she meets Bahar and then Bahar is like... well, I think Roop says... I really like music. And then Bahar goes, here we call music singing. There's such a long pause. I'm like, that's not a correction to what she said, you fuck.
Oh, Bahar. I mean, Bahar's song and dance numbers were really fun.
They were really fun. I really appreciate that the Bollywood style of dance is very flashy and showy.
Me too. And I love the drama. I love the melodrama of every fucking Bollywood film ever.
Yeah.
What do you think that Roop was a bit of a pick-me-girl at the beginning?
For sure.
Bit of a pick-me-girl.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I feel like she was a bit arrogant at the beginning. I like Roop. She was fine.
I like that she was arrogant, but there were points where I'm like, you can chill. Yeah. I also feel like Satya was the dumbest girl in the world.
Because
I don't think she was constantly frustrated that Roop seemed upset by this.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you emotionally blackmailed your childhood friend into marrying your husband.
Yeah. And we That's still so don't weird. Know why.
Why?
There's this bit where like he realizes...
He's not into it.
She realizes that like, you know, Dev and Roop are becoming friendly. And it makes her both like happy and sad.
Yeah.
And which, she even says to him, she's like, I have a jealousy, but it's a good jealousy. And it's like, it's an unnecessary jealousy. You introduced her.
You don't have to do this, man.
Yeah. I don't understand. That is the premise of the film is that she invites Roop to marry her husband. And we literally... don't know why, and I don't know if it's a custom or a culture, if it's expected, but it seems like all the characters didn't expect it and didn't want it.
Mm.
So why did it happen?
Because Satya was going to die.
Yeah.
She asked for it.
Can I also say, this is set in the 40s.
Okay.
Every character looks like they're from the 40s, and the sets look really nice. Like they're from I love The Office. There's some really nice, you know, it's very period piece,
mm-hmm.
except I think Zahar does not look... like he's from the 40s.
He looks like he's TikTok hot.
He looks like, and I know that he's wearing the traditional like Indian shirt that goes like longer. It's a traditional garb.
Mm.
But when it's just the shots of him chest up, he looks like he's in a shirt from Tarot Cash. And he looks like...
He's
wearing a thick like diamond earring and he's wearing a necklace with like, it looks like there's a bullet in it or something. And he looks like he's trying to be edgy. Like he's going to like show up to the fucking like, I don't know, Green Day show in 2009. He doesn't look. And honestly,
he looks
I think
like someone that's about to sell you weed.
Exactly. I know what it is. It's every other male character had hair that looked like it was from the 1940s. It was often waxed or gelled into these quiffs.
Mm-hmm.
Not Zafar. It was always this kind of shaggy cut with no gel or wax.
Which is fine, it made him too look styled.
Too styled. Yeah. It looked like he had a bit of gel in the tips. And so I was like, you look like you're from 2008.
Can you answer me? There's one bit where I really thought I had lost the fucking plot. I felt like I looked away from the screen for 2 seconds and I was like, what the fuck is going on? Because suddenly, about like an hour in, you cut to... like a mountain in the middle of nowhere. It looks like it's nowhere near Husnabad, where there's like a fucking Black Panther arena carved into the side.
Oh my god. Yes, we have to talk about the bullfight.
And all of a sudden, Zafar or Zahar?
Oh, shit. I said Zafar, but Sorry, it's Zafar. Sorry,
Zafar.
Yeah.
Where Zafar, they explain he needs to, like, not just, like, ride a bull for 7 seconds like a rodeo. He needs to get on the bull first, and he's just, like, shirtless doing it, and everyone's watching it like he is, like, the local town champion in the 1300s.
It's like Matador meets, like, cowboy. It is like, not only do you need to tame the bull, then you need to ride the bull for a good 7 seconds.
This is, like, what is this medieval arena?
Well, I loved it. You know what it reminded me of? I'm so glad you brought it up. So the CGI bull,
why did they do that?
The bull was the thing that was CGI'd. They even say at the beginning, they're like, no animals were harmed in this film, the bull has been CGI'd. And it's like, you really didn't have to go to this extent.
Like how there was the shot every single time there was a shot with smoking in it, there was smoking kills in the corner.
Yeah, so that bull was fucking a fantastic scene, my favorite scene of all. When, as you say, they're in the middle of the mountains and there's like this ring carved into the fucking earth. I want everyone to imagine the stadium that Harry is in Hogwarts, in Harry Potter 4, when he's battling the dragon. Think of how that's like an arena in the middle of the mountains, in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. That's this. Everything CGI'd, the bull CGI'd, and it's this.
It's like that, but out of Game of Thrones. Like, that could have been a scene in Essos.
And it becomes particularly funny every time that Zafar has to interact with the bull, because in the scene that he's in, suddenly he becomes all compressed and jagged, and he's like flying in the air.
Everything moves like it's not quite keyframed right.
And at first it beats the shit out of him, and he's on the ground.
Because it's
and
a bull.
And then Rupert is suddenly like, and she's now having intimate feelings about him.
He almost gets fully gored.
He's stalked her enough. By the way, he fully follows her around. There's a bit where they have never met and they're about to be, you know, courting, and he's about to woo her. She's coming out of, you know, the madam's palace, and she's walking down the steps, and he grabs her by the wrist and stops her. And I was like, this would be assault. If a stranger was trying to make eye contact with me and then grab me by the wrist to stop me, I'd be like, get the fuck off me, I'm gonna mace you.
Yeah.
But she finds it really alluring and captivating, and then he fully proceeds to like hound her and harass her, and it's meant to be like all this light, tinkly romantic music is playing, and I was like, is this
I know some of it is, I can't remember if that was before or after she had asked him to show her Husnabad for her column in the newspaper.
She had asked his boss. She hadn't asked him.
That's true.
She'd asked his boss, so he knew she was after it. But anyway,
the scene is like 40% montage.
I know. And then he invites her to this rink, and then he's fucking fighting a bull.
So he invites her?
He invites her. Okay. And she says, why did you invite me? That you almost died.
Because I feel like I missed that, and it just suddenly cut. And again, we're like in a fucking scene out of Game of Thrones.
And so that fight, you know, it almost mauls him. He gets back up and he flips over the bull
over
to
the
ride
front
it for
of the
7 seconds.
Bull.
And then it kicks him off and he's lying there. Everyone's cheering. The bull doesn't care about him anymore, apparently. It's just gone off and done its own thing, because he's happily lying there unattacked by
the
bull.
I thought he was about to die.
Yeah. There were so many shots in this where you're like, what's the other thing in this scene doing? This has lingered too far. I know how you're feeling. You've been looking at the camera for 10 seconds now. Where's the other person gone?
Yeah.
If you cut this film down, if you got rid of the long stairs, if you made the stores a normal length, I honestly think you could shave a good half
this
hour off
the
film.
This does not need to be 2:45.
No, it could be 2 hours if you shaved off all the staring scenes. Like, the long staring scenes are so, so cripplingly long.
But I think sometimes that is made up for, because there's... There's the sequence where Zafar and Dev don't realize who the other is, and so they start talking, and then they have a fun it's just like such a classic scene in these kinds of movies.
And they're like yelling.
But yeah, they're doing the yell by the water and it's fun. But then they'd have like the dance number together where I'm like, okay, now I really like you doing this.
Yeah.
But then after that, that's when Zafar meets not Bahar, the dad.
Mm.
For the first time, and the dad just looks at Bahar and is like, I told you to abort him, which is a shockingly funny line.
Oh my god.
I told you to abort him.
Balraj is his name.
Balraj, right.
That's so fucking gnarly. You know what I found out, listeners?
Yeah.
In Christmas 2022, I found out that my dad...
What?
Had, after they found out...
The lead-in we have to this, I don't know how you're going to follow up on
this. Well, I think it'll make sense to you in a second.
Okay.
I found out that my dad, 2 weeks after finding out that they were pregnant with me, my dad got a vasectomy. 2 weeks after they found out.
Was
and
it
my mom
planned?
He found out that mum was pregnant, and he went, let's make sure this doesn't happen again, and got his fucking dick snipped within 2 weeks. And I was like,
but that's not what a vasectomy is.
Fully chopped off the end of his dick.
Abigail.
But I was like, wow. Like, my parents are really careful about always, well, my mum is. She's always like, you guys were delightful surprises. But my dad was like, I never thought I'd be a dad, you know? It's just like, they're very blasé about the fact that we exist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think actually is what parents should be.
It is healthy. Like, I think it's, and we weren't massively sought after. We really, I mean, I had great parents. I can't complain at all.
Yeah.
Even though they didn't expect us, they caught on to it well, and they adapted.
They caught on.
Yeah.
They caught the bug.
Yeah.
They caught the bug.
It's a tummy bug.
Oh, yeah. I meant the parenting bug.
Yeah.
They caught the bug, you know?
But yeah, so that was a bit of a... I was like, you got a vasectomy within 2 weeks of finding out you guys were pregnant with me? And my dad was like, I was 38, Abigail. He was like, I think that was my limit.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
I think neither of my parents did such thing, but I think after my sister was born, my mum was like, no more.
No, we're not this doing, is enough.
We're not doing another one.
Yeah.
I think I'm good.
I get it. I'm 28 now. Sometimes I wonder if I'm going to get clucky in the next 2 years. I wonder.
Clucky?
Clucky. Like, I want a kid.
Oh, I didn't know that's a term.
Mm, yeah.
Well, if it's ever an accident, you can give it to me.
Yeah, true.
I've made that offer to too many of my friends now for it to count as a funny joke.
Yeah.
As yeah. much as a desperate plea.
Truth is, if it was an accident, why would I carry it for 9 months?
I know. I can have it, Abigail.
The fear
Abigail.
Isn't even just the child. The fear is me having a baby.
But
that's
more it.
But
it would be such a great present.
It would be. If I had twins, I'd give you one.
Aww.
You're welcome.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
I wonder how they would feel.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because
what if we fell out and then they don't get to see their sibling anymore?
It feels like, but not quite like The Parent Trap.
Yes.
You know?
With Dennis Quaid in it.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, that's not this week. That was last week, but it's still relevant.
Yeah. Anyway.
I'll take your twin. You don't have to give it to me. I'll just take it.
Which twin would you take if there was a good or a bad twin?
How would I know which twin?
You can tell from their eyes once they're born.
Would I take the good or the evil twin?
Yeah. If you knew which one was which.
Okay. So if you're giving, I would appreciate being given the good one.
Yeah, but I'm giving, so you should take the bad one.
Well, okay. I just feel like that diminishes the gift. But if I'm taking, I'll take the bad one.
Delivering a child that you get to have, you know?
But you're keeping one.
Yeah. I'm allowed to, it's my
okay.
pussy getting wrecked.
If I was to take one or choose, I would take the bad one.
Thank
and I think
you.
In part, I don't believe in, you know, nature versus nurture. I would raise it with empathy,
aww.
You know, in the hopes that it could become good anyway. And then aww. If I had a kid of my own, I wouldn't have to care. I'd be like, well, you're evil.
Get out.
Get out. And that is how we get Boss Baby.
He's the neglected evil child of
mine. Boss Baby is your evil twin child.
That's the Boss Baby lore.
Who time traveled back to entrap us in this evil contract.
When I have my kids, I'll be like, don't these look familiar? These babies day, look a day, lot like Boss Baby.
One day you're showing them Boss Baby and you're like,
Hang on. And then I compare the two photos unnecessarily because I've already yeah. figured it out. But
for the film's sake, yeah.
They're identical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay, so we're establishing now precedent. The canon is you have twins.
Yeah.
I take the evil one.
Yeah.
But then I have a kid of my own and the child gets abandoned.
Yeah.
And so it is your biological but my emotional child. So our collective child.
Yes. And even though we both technically abandoned him, yours is way worse.
Mine's
you
way
should
worse.
I think he's got a thing out for you more than me.
Yeah.
You know?
Which is why that's why I have to edit them.
Yeah.
These episodes.
That's your punishment.
And so at one point, I think we've established there's a devil power. So the baby gets an offer from the devil
yeah.
and is able to time travel back, get us to sign a binding devil contract.
Yeah. Implants the idea implants in our the head idea. To make this
you know
podcast.
How to trap these two with their love of bad movies.
These two think they're funny enough to run a podcast for 5 years.
Oh, and they might be right, but they'll get more than they bargained for.
Wow. Well, yeah, if I do get clucky, I'll let you know.
Now we know.
You know, I'll just get Claude to double fuck me. That's how you make twins. Double fuck. Back to back. Semen on semen.
Man, you got... So every next time I see someone with twins, I'm like, man, you got double fucked.
Yeah, you got double fucked, didn't you?
I think... Well, because that's how you get fraternal twins. Identical twins, it's the one, but it splits. The fraternal twins, it's two mounds of semen.
Yes, yes. And then if you get DP'd, baby, you got triplets. You get double fucked in the pussy, and then I don't want to keep going with this.
And then one in the stink.
People's mothers listen to
this. This is it. We found the reverse shocker. It's two in the pink, one in the stink, but they're all dicks.
Do you want to hear some trivia about this film?
Wait, I think we're in the middle of a revelation, Abigail.
Again, I think there are people I don't want hearing
you're
me talk
right.
like this.
People's mothers listen to this.
People's mothers
Soon,
listen to this.
You.
I think sometimes my uncle... I don't want to. There's a reason I don't tell my parents about this podcast, or I don't remind them of it. I really don't want them listening to this.
I think I couldn't emotionally handle if my mom was like, oh, cool, and then didn't care for it.
Whereas I'm like, I don't want to hear my mom talking about like fucking DPs. My mom didn't even give me like the fucking birds and the bees talk because she's too Anglo. Yeah. I don't think she could handle this.
Whereas I got it from my mom... too many times. She really wanted me to know, and I knew.
Yeah. I just had to look up vagina on the internet, and then I couldn't spell it right, so I would type in Virginia.
Virginia.
And be like, what? This is so annoying.
What? But that's what got you your interest in Civil War history.
Vagina, Civil War loves.
You were just all horny, filled with hormones, and you started looking at Virginia and getting into the Civil War, and you're like, oh my god.
We've talked about this before, but there's really nothing like when you're like 10 and you're trying to look up like sex on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Looking at the Wikipedia for boobies.
Yeah. Yeah. For like coitus penetration. You're like, coitus. Ugh. Do you want to hear some trivia?
Hell yeah. IMDb
trivia. So... I've got one piece of trivia for you.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Apparently, there was this really famous Indian actress called Sridevi.
Okay.
She had been cast as Bahar, and Sridevi was also enormous, just as big as the woman that ended up playing her. But she
30 feet tall.
But she drowned unexpectedly. Oh, my God. At, like, the age of, like 50-something. Oh, and so they got in her. That's... all I could
but
find.
She drowned.
But that's all I got. Every
I'm
other
not
piece
laughing
of trivia.
At someone drowning. That's not what I'm giggling at.
We're not. But every other piece of trivia was like, this person has worked with this person before.
No, I hate
this
those.
Person almost got cast in this role. And then you're like, oh yeah.
I hate those unless it's like insane, you know?
Exactly. If it's like a crazy option. But I'm like, I don't know any of these actors. Yeah. This is not interesting to me.
This is especially not interesting for
this. Yeah, and I'm pretty sure none of them were returning guest stars on the...
Yeah.
I didn't recognize any of the names. That's all the trivia I've got.
Ooh.
I mean, we could talk about... the partition, but that's really just grasping at straws for something to talk
it's
about.
It's up to you. We can just go into reviews.
All right, fuck it. Let's go to reviews.
Yeah.
Fuck the partition. Well, not fuck the partition, but like...
No, fuck the partition. The partition was a bad thing.
It
was dividing a culture in two.
Yeah.
And inciting a lot of intentional sectarian religious violence.
It's
horrible.
But the partition is often wrapped up in the independence of India, which is why some people get really like fucking weird about you saying fuck the partition.
Oh, but that's fucking
nonsense. I know.
It's fucking nonsense.
Reviews. Reviews! So Kalank received mixed reviews upon release. It had praise for its soundtrack and the cinematography, the production design, the costumes, and the performances of the ensemble cast, but the criticism was towards the direction, the story, and the length,
yeah,
which makes a lot of sense.
That makes a lot of sense.
Also, I didn't really say this at the beginning, but straight up, I know it's a long film, but it really is not worse than a lot of the films we've seen here, I think.
Yeah, I think that's true.
I really don't think it deserves to be this low on the list.
No, it is, when I think about how low it is,
yeah,
how famous some of the, like, this is really low for a movie that's, like, fine.
Exactly, I think about all the shit, like, Meet the Blacks had a better score than this.
That's
nonsense.
Meet the Blacks was the second highest on this list.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
You know what? That's insane.
People think Cat in the Hat is worse than Meet the Blacks.
I agree.
Shut up, Michelle. Shut up.
Fuck. Fuck.
Rishit Gupta of the Times of India rated the film 3 stars out of 5. He remarked, Kalank is a true labor of love that tells you a story laced with beautiful moments that will tug at your heartstrings. He concluded saying it was visually stunning. All of the reviews are like 3 out of 5. Not good, but not bad.
Yeah.
He's still laughing.
That was one of the funniest jokes you've done in a while.
We're telling you to shut up.
Yeah, right. As I was trying to say, I agree with you.
Oh. I didn't realize. I saw this look in your eyes of you wanted to pounce on Cat in the Hat.
No, I was saying I agree.
Okay.
Okay, continue.
You really hate Cat in the Hat.
I don't. That's not true. Okay, continue. You're right. It's a lot of three, like, not bad, but not fine. 3.5 out of 10.
Someone also says, Kalenk doesn't really lift off the screen. The whole feels like a giant set, stately and ponderous and minus impact. The characters all costumed and perfumed and largely lifeless, sparking only in bits and pieces, which is very, it's a good way to put it.
You know, I wonder if it's also a cultural thing, because we've talked about how part of the whole problem is, like, in so much Western media, 7 out of 10 is seen as mediocre, but 7 out of 10 is good. That's above average.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe it's partly cultural of, like, a 5 out of 10 really is mediocre. And so they're like, it's not great. 3.
Yeah.
True.
I will say as well, it does feel like one big set. There's this bit where Roop meets Bahar for the first time. Mm. The mentor, the singer, the madam. And she kind of goes through the town. There's a big festival happening. And then she gets into the palace and they start singing at each other and whirling around. And then they stop. And this kind of one of the servants that works for Roop comes up behind her and she's like, "My lady, it's getting late. We should leave." And I was like, there is no time in this world. No.
Yeah.
They have been on one big set for like 3 hours spinning around and dancing. I don't think there is an evening anymore.
Also, wasn't it the middle of the day?
Yeah, like, exactly. And I was like, you haven't done anything to show that time has elapsed.
When did that woman get there?
Really, that sequence did last for 5 minutes, but it could have been 3 hours.
Yeah.
And so when she's like, it's getting late, it's like, didn't you just arrive? I don't... Anyway.
Very... Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
It's timeless.
Here's a review left on IMDb. It's a 10 out of 10 review left by Lack SHNJ. It's a 10 out of 10 review left in 2019 called Awesome Movie Lavish Sets. The movie sets, the costumes, acting of the lead actors were all awesome. The sets were lavish. It was a treat. Surprised by so many negative comments. Stupid Shah Rukh and Salman Khan get movies ranked much higher. Maybe the public are not rating movies realistically. I have started to get a feeling that clearly user review ratings of Indian movies are not realistic on IMDb.
Oh.
And that stood out to me because I was like, bitch, you're right. All right. No user ratings on this platform makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Here's a 10 out of 10 review left by Faz Mare called Must Watch. It's 2:11 a.m. I just finished watching this beautiful movie. With beautiful love stories and an amazing song, one, I really enjoyed it. Now I feel sorry that I didn't watch this in the big screen, all just because of many negative comments. So, 3 exclamation marks, I won't trust anyone anymore. Dot, who is mixing politics about Muslims and blah, blah, blah? I'm an outsider. What? I love watching Bollywood movies. Let us to trust your reviews. But if it's bad acting, awful songs, or whatever, it's okay. But please, don't bring politics into it, please. Sad face.
What?
10 out of 10.
It's a movie about the partition of India. What do you mean, don't bring
politics into it, Michelle?
It's a political event. What do
Okay, 8 out of 10 review left by Rishigetia called Did I Watch the Same Thing? All in capitals. I'm not going to yell this one.
No, that's fine.
The film was amazing. Big budget, aesthetically pleasing, amazing acting, amazing songs, performances, and good storyline with twists and turns to keep you entertained. Entertained? What is with all the negativity these days? Jesus. 8 out of 10. And here's the last review.
I'm fucking crying. The last 20 minutes of the podcast have been so funny for me.
Here's a 10 out of 10 review left by Invisible Soul called Beautiful Enchanting Experience.
Oh.
I was about to watch this movie first day, first show, and for some reason, I couldn't. By next day, it was hammered by our pseudo-intellectual critics, so much so that whoever said otherwise labeled it as paid reviews. After long, really beautiful epic love stories is shown on equally beautiful canvases. An epic love story that takes you with them in their love journey. There's a lot of love stories and love journeys being thrown around.
There really is.
With beautiful, rhythmic, poetic dialogues and equally enchanting canvases.
A lot of canvases.
A lot of canvases. They hammered it for its rhythmic dialogues. Seriously, a love story with Muslim backdrop will not even have a Shayra and Daz Don't know what that means. Poetry used to flow in the veins of mostly everyone during that era, especially in Punjab. One thing disappointing is the screenplay, which doesn't flow smoothly. True. But this is a minor crack in an otherwise masterpiece canvas. It's beautiful, enchanting experience for any diehard romantic. Varun Maduri, who played Fajar? Oh my god, sorry, I'm dying. Sorry, he played Zafar. Varun acting is so top level. Every nuance of his character, so well depicted. Certainly the best performance of Varun. They all gave such good performances. I'm glad I watched this love story on the big screen. I realized one thing: Indian critics are not to be trusted, just like politicians. 10 out of 10. Unexpected twist there at the end.
Yeah, really?
But that was that lunatic's fucking review. What was your review, Michelle?
This movie defies being reviewed. Like, like what? The songs were fine. They were not as good as the songs in Rawan. I'm begging for a song about how much a guy loves his wife again.
Rawan was amazing.
I want to watch Rawan again.
Me too.
Let's do it. We got to organize a movie night soon.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the songs in Thugs of Hindustan more. I didn't care for the songs in Tube Light, and I care less for the songs in this.
Same.
I cared more for the dancing than the songs in this.
Yeah, me too.
The sets were great. The performances were fine. Fuck it. It's a 3.5.
Mm. Wait, did you say 2 or 3?
3.5. 3.5,
yeah.
3.5. Like, you know, it had bits going on. I think if this was earlier in the list, I would have given it like a 4.5 or even a 5. But I wish I just stared at the wall.
Yeah.
You know?
Look, I'm on a similar page as you, but then I just felt this really sudden onset of anger and resentment over how much of my morning this took up. And it does look like a movie. It's beautiful, so it's at least a 2. And I would have given it maybe a 3, but because it took up my precious morning.
Yeah.
And so much time was spent watching a woman on a Saturday on the bluest, most beautiful day, and I watched this film.
Yeah.
I'm tempted to go 0, but I'm just being spiteful. It's a 2.2. I'm just going the same as last week.
Nice.
2.2.
2.2. Abby's getting harsh.
Yeah.
Abby's coming down with an iron fist.
I am.
She's punching.
That I've let myself be here today.
You're disappointed in yourself?
Yeah. The me of 3.5 years ago should have said, actually, this is a terrible idea.
Actually, I don't think we should do this.
I don't think we should. I think it will make us dumber and angrier.
I think maybe we should make a premise that we can bow out of.
Yeah, yeah. You know? That we don't have to, like, an effectively, like, a to-do list in the podcast that we have to complete.
Well, I think we cut to that alternate timeline. Boss Baby, happy as hell.
Yeah.
You know, dancing in the flowers, you know, Where's the Sunshine's playing. Me, grave.
In a grave.
In a grave.
Because you didn't have the podcast to live for.
Because I didn't have the podcast to live for.
Michelle.
So bit of A, bit of B.
So then we're in the better timeline.
Thanks, babe. You're welcome. Thanks. Wow.
Well, guys, hey, guess what? We're on social media. Did you know? Have you heard? Oh, my God.
What?
We're on X at Rate Descend Pod. We're on TikTok at Rating Descending. And you can even email us. Oh, God.
Oh, she's coming. She's coming.
Oh, that hurt. At You can email us at I had this, like, pain in my chest before it came out. You can email us at ratingdescending@gmail.com. It really makes a difference.
Or you can find us on our own social media. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at michelle.stclair. You can find me on Letterboxd at mstclair. You can find Unerased, the docuseries, on Instagram at -18youth or on TikTok at unerased.tv. You can find No Ordinary Love on YouTube at No Ordinary Love Series. Or you can find Shippers on Instagram and YouTube at Shippers the Series.
Or you can also not find me on Instagram, but you can follow us on YouTube now at Rating Descending.
Or, you know, on top of that, not or, and, if you wouldn't mind, if you please, hey, leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts, because it really, really does make a difference.
Well, that was Kalank, Michelle. What are we watching next week?
Oh, God.
What is it?
Next week, we're watching The Hungover Games.
Oh, my God.
We're finally in, like, the 2000s parody movies. Oh my god.
Oh man. Oh,
it's old. It's like in 2 weeks after that, we got Stan Helsing. Oh my
god.
We're really. Oh, Jesus. Okay. Hey, I mean, I'm glad I rewatched all the Hunger Games movies last year.
Alright, well.
See you then.
We'll be there.
If you're here for the masochism, you're gonna love next week.
Oh, yeah.